My name is Rich Anderson, and the title of this presentation is Love and Addiction. And I promised myself yesterday that I will not do another session without reminding everybody that the Holden Tape Ministry tapes all of these, all of the sessions, including Vespers, and the tapes are available in the bookstore. So if, like yesterday, last evening's session on anger, people were rabidly taking notes and wanted to borrow my notes and that sort of thing, and when I told them that it was all on tape and they could get the tape, big relief. This topic is something that's of personal interest to me. I'm an ordained Lutheran minister, and I'm a marriage and family counselor, and work in chemical dependency. And we decided, I didn't prepare before I left home to do this, but in talking over the different options and discussion things that people were interested in, we thought this might be an interesting discussion. And so rather than preparing a whole lot of stuff to give you, I thought maybe we as a group could work out and try and come to some thoughts and ideas ourselves out of our own personal experiences. So this isn't going to be a feed you the gems lecture. I think more it's going to be an attempt to have all of us try to pull together some thoughts or ideas. I was also going to say that Ray has left and won't be singing us a song, but we've got accordion music, so. I've done a little preparing, but before we get to that stuff, let's try to do some defining in our own words of what the two things are. And I think what might be helpful is for us to try and sort out the difference rather than the way that they're similar. Let's try to sort out the way that they're different. And a couple parameters I'd like us to try to stay within are, let's try to avoid getting way off into philosophical, metaphysical, mystical, mental brain teasing. My preference is, let's attempt to try to stay down to earth, very practical where we live today. I sit through a lot of discussions where we go off on metaphysical trips and then I just get headaches. So please, try to avoid that. The thing I think is important in looking at love and addiction is that, again, like the anger last night, in a sense they're on a continuum. And in a sense there's sort of a gray area where it's not real clear what's what. But if we look at trying to define and understand and figure out what they are a little further out from the gray area, maybe that'll help us clarify the gray area. In thinking of the two, think about relationships that you live with, or in, or have lived in. And these are relationships almost anywhere you go. The one that's often considered primary is the relationship between two people who become lovers and maybe get married. But there's the relationships that you have with your parents that I think are very important. There are relationships that you have with your children that are just as important. There's also relationships that you have with peers and coworkers and bosses and people that you supervise at work, or neighbors, friends. So let's try to think on relationship sorts of levels and talk about what's the difference. What does it mean to be in a loving relationship? What does it mean to be in an addictive relationship? Okay? Ideas. Give me one or the other, or any either.
Can you move the board up a little bit?
I move the board up. Okay.
A little bit, thanks.
You mean forward,
forward.
Not up.
Thank you.
Now, everybody see that? Okay. Somebody said care. Where does that go?
Love.
Under love.
Security.
Or security.
Love.
Where does that go?
Safety and security.
Love.
Goes under love.
Under addiction.
Oh, that just started now. We got an argument.
But care can go under addiction also.
Wow.
I
agree.
Okay. Gray.
Those are the gray.
We'll put security in the gray area for now.
Need.
Where?
Addiction.
Not
two.
Not all
of
them.
Need under love?
Sure, yes, absolutely.
A
lot of gray area.
Well, is there some push for this to be gray, or is it?
Yeah, gray.
Gray.
You may know more gray than
that. Now, this isn't a democratic society. Anybody who thinks it belongs gray has the power to put it there.
I see. Love as being something that you yourself have some say or some control over, and the addiction is more of a sucking in or a lack of control. Or out of control.
Okay.
Depends on who it's centered in, too. I see love as being other-centered and addiction as me-centered.
Okay. Sometimes I think somebody planted you people that have all these good thoughts about it.
That was the Lord's will.
That's another word.
Love is
dependency. Dependency, where?
Addiction.
Gray area.
Gray area?
Gray area? Please, before I write it down, tell me. Okay.
Love is a commitment.
Voluntary is love.
Voluntary?
So is addiction. Getting into it.
So voluntary, you want to be
great?
Great. Okay.
Love is healing. Love is healing.
Healing.
And commitment. Our addiction is
sickness.
Is borders on illness.
Okay.
Or it can bring illness.
How about in the sense of if you talk about healing as being at ease, addiction is dis-ease? Not at ease?
Dis-ease.
Disease.
Unease.
All right. Well,
this easy.
Unease.
What I was getting at there is that if you're in an addictive relationship, that person can suck so much out of you that you can end up being ill.
Mm-hmm. And that person who is the one.
Yeah. Okay. Who gets ill?
Both.
The sucker or the sucky?
Very possibly both.
I got to learn to behave myself.
It's
going down
for
me.
Okay, good point. More?
Fulfillment?
Where?
Gray area.
Fulfillment. Gray area, okay. Constructive, destructive. Okay, good concept. Where do they go?
Constructive love, destructive.
But you can have a destructive love.
Wait a minute. Well, George, not trouble love. Destructive.
No, it's not an addiction. You can have a destructive love.
Well, okay. Now we got a new rule. We're going to put a star by something that we can debate and discuss. You can have a destructive love.
Yes.
But
You'll have a chance to bring that up and we'll discuss it before we leave. You can have a destructive love. Okay, more?
Understanding.
Understanding.
Under
what could be addicted? You can understand that.
Well, understanding in that sense of relation.
But it's not.
So is that a grade?
No, it's not a grade.
Definitely take a bolt out of your day.
Understanding? Is there a complimentary one over here then?
Misunderstanding?
No, not an addicted one.
Self-centeredness. Oh, we've already got that.
Addiction, how about the manipulation under addiction?
Manipulation. Okay.
Choice, love, must or have to, addiction.
Compulsion.
How about communication?
Where?
Great. That's great.
Communication is great.
Yes.
So, I think anytime you use the word love, you're talking about a gray area. Because love is used in such a contradictory way in our society between the love of pizza and the love of people and
the making of love, the falling in love.
Guilt
and
addiction.
Yeah, it's real difficult. You know, most in our society fall in love and then they make love. How can you fall into something you haven't made yet?
Addiction would be guilt.
Guilt. Is there a compliment to guilt and love?
Freedom.
Forgiveness?
You feel forgiven.
Freedom goes where?
Track.
Last one, trap. I like the concept of bound for addiction and you're binded in love, but you're bound in addiction. I know they're the same word.
Bonded
and bound. Bonded.
And
bond between two people. Yeah, the bond and
bound. Bond and bounded. So they love.
Bond.
And
bounded.
Fettered in addiction. Yeah, fettered.
Tied up. Bound up.
Right.
How about long suffering?
Where does that go?
Great.
Okay.
I'm
going to
read the Bible.
Now, the comment was not according to the Bible.
Long suffering, what?
Trust.
Trust. Where does that go? But if I'm addicted to cocaine, I trust that stuff's going to get hurt.
Great. Also, if you're in an addiction relationship with a person, there's a phenomenal trust there, too.
Yeah, but that's a different sense of trust. That's
is that
really equivocating on the use of trust.
Is it trust or is it something else?
Dependence.
It's codependence. You don't trust cocaine. You don't trust cocaine. You don't trust that.
Yeah.
Trust means it's almost like faith.
A reliance upon or expectation of performance.
But in the true sense of trust, that can only be love. But you have the expectation of something.
Is there an equivalent over here in addiction then?
Need.
Need and gray.
Clarification here. We're talking about personal relationships, not chemical dependence, right?
Yeah. And I confess I'm the one that.
You can trust that this addictive relationship. If you say I trust this person, it's different. If you say I trust that this person will use me, and I think that's equivocating on what we mean by trust.
and therefore trust one to love rather than both?
Oh, I think it belongs in the gray area.
Because,
well, you trust the sun to rise. I trust George to come home from work. I trust that the money's going to be there. I trust the cocaine is going to make me high. I trust my love will be returned. I still trust.
Again, that word trust has a loose.
Yeah, it's gray.
It's a pretty big, broad thing.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's still an equivocation of what the word trust means.
Yeah. Well, out of the fear of getting into a semantic problems, I'll put it both places. Chicken is right.
Competition under addiction.
Competition?
The misguided going under addiction.
Misguided?
Patient, kind, and gentle.
Under
love.
Second Corinthians.
Somebody wants to move something over to gray?
Yeah, or put it in the gray.
Which
fine.
One? Kind?
I agree. You can use your
impatient in addiction.
Patient.
Impatient.
And impatient over here.
Demanding on this side?
Demanding? I don't think so.
No. Possessiveness.
Giving on the other side of Israel.
Addiction.
Okay, second. Possessiveness. And giving.
That's me.
Fear.
Fear under addiction.
Growth under gray.
Jealousy.
Growth under gray. Mm.
Jealousy.
Where?
Addiction?
Gray.
Gray.
Addiction.
Okay. We can go on forever. Let me pass out a few of the things. A couple things I've done to try and do a little homework. Because, you know, when you present one of these things, you're supposed to do homework. I took a look at the one book I had with me that did anything with this. The Road Less Traveled by Scott Peck, MD. How many people have read this? Okay, a few of you have. I would really encourage you to take a look at it. It's not recreational reading, but it's also not heavy psychology or theology. Peck is a psychiatrist, and he, in this book, works through some of the things about love, self-sacrifice, some case studies. It's a very interesting presentation. There are only about 50 copies of the sheet I'm passing out, so we're going to have to spread them out and share them. Like,
can you throw a couple up here?
Two loaves and five fishes, you know?
Five loaves and two fishes.
Thank you.
Bring it up.
Take one.
Some of you perfectionists, I don't know. Another book, if you're looking for something to read, is called Love and Addiction by Stanton Peale, P-E-A-L-E.
Up here?
He talks some about chemical addiction as well as relationship addictions. Love and Addiction is the title of another book by Stanton Peale, P-E-A-L-E, I think, is the author. And M. Scott Peck, M.D., The Road Less Traveled is another interesting one. On this sheet, again, just some other thoughts that I pulled out of Peck's book and a couple other little things I had around. Peck talks about dividing love into romantic love and real love, and he says some interesting things. He does a whole section on falling in love. and that whole initial romantic thing, and he talks about it as being a misconception. It really isn't love at all. It's a sex-linked erotic experience. It's temporary and hormonal. It's also a very exciting solution to people's loneliness, and it has no self or other growth or enlarging qualities to it. It's really kind of a whirlwind of hormones that people get caught up into. But he does say it provides for loss of ego boundaries needed to initiate the process of real love. It provides an opportunity in a close, intimate, trusting experience for people to let down their defenses, let down their masks, and to be honestly open to the other, and to be vulnerable and transparent. And that kind of letting down of ego boundaries allows the sharing between two people that goes beyond the hormones and gives people an opportunity to really check out personalities and begin to plant some of the seeds of an initial relationship building. He then goes on to talk about real love. But I think at this point, let's flip the sheet and look at addiction, first of all. Now, not everything on here is from Peel. Some of the things are. One definition is addiction is a sterile, ingrown relationship with another serving as the object of one's need for gratification or satisfaction. It can also be defined as a harmful hanging on for security, fulfillment, worth, with another who is one's whole purpose in life or reason for being. That talks somewhat about the other person being the whole focus. That goes on a little further. It's the inability to experience wholeness or to function adequately without the certainty that one is being actively cared for by another. The relationship is based on need, not want. So here he's saying that need goes into addiction, not the gray area. A passive dependency without the ability to delay gratification of the hunger for attention. In that sense, it's a real childlike, immature experience of not being able to delay gratification to get the attention you want. I want it now. I want the attention from you now, when and where and how and the way I want it. There's a lack of self-focus, but rather a predominant other focus. Don't look at you. Don't try to see or understand me. Really focus on the other person and what they're doing and what they're all about, and that's everything.
It contradicts our other-centeredness, does it? Or put that in the book of love. I don't think they're talking about the same thing.
No.
I'm not sure.
Well, we're saying addictive love is focusing on other here. But up there we put it under love.
No, but they're saying it the opposite way. Because there it's saying that you can focus on others. This one is saying that it's focused on the dominator or something like that, or relationship.
With total lack of concern for yourself.
Yeah. This is talking about a devoided self-value and care. Everything's on the other. Where other-centered, maybe that doesn't belong.
When I
here.
Said that, other-centered and me-centered, I meant it in the sense that others, that you can give to others freely because you're okay yourself.
Yeah.
Whereas addiction with the me-centered is that it centers on how I'm feeling in this relationship about this other person, much more selfish than the other. And I don't really see any contradiction to what he's got here, just another way of saying something.
Okay.
In another sense, the giving or centering around another person is the self-fulfillment of that person. they're giving, 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 but that's the only way they can feel that they're worth anything.
And the giving is only for what it will get me, rather than for what I can give.
Focused elsewhere for your needs. Focused elsewhere for your needs is what this is talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas giving, focusing on others for giving is what we're talking about.
Yeah, for the sharing, giving, interacting. Yeah. Okay. Lack of self-evaluation and or assessment. Again, it's the devoid of being open, transparent, and taking a look at yourself and working on self-growth. Inability to see life or experience meaning, or experience meaning to live without the other. Concern is that the other is there to satisfy the self, not concerned for the other's growth. Being together is primary, all else is secondary. Unconcerned with spiritual growth. Now that may not mean that there isn't some concern about Bible study and going to church and that sort of thing. I think what Peck is talking about is the growth and development and blossoming of who each of us are spiritually and personality spiritually wise. Lacking in the courage, openness, and willingness to risk. Lack in clear boundaries between I and thou. It's all we. And it's tough to sort out the difference. Individualism, individuation, and self-identity development are discouraged or disallowed. That one maybe needed to come before lack of clear boundaries, because without individualism, individuation, and self-identity development, you're not going to get clear boundaries. And it's a powerful, subtle, baffling, cunning, progressive process.
I think that lack of individualism, individuation, and so on also goes back to unconcerned with spiritual growth. Sort of like you want everything to be the same as it is, well, it tie in. And that if one changes it, if one person should grow or change, it will totally disrupt the relationship.
Big threat.
It will totally disrupt the world.
Sure. The other person growing or changing is a serious threat to even the existence of the relationship. Yeah. So the motivation is against growth and individual development to maintain the relationship.
Is that phrase, that goal, that love, fit into something like this, where you were... See, so much of what the marriage example, talking about marriage, but the relationship, assuming the marriage relationship, assumes that we're going to be bonded, one flesh, one. Mm-hmm. It's implied throughout all that. And here we're talking about each individual. Is that a contradiction in a way between what we've been talking about?
Okay, the question is, we're talking about individual people, and so much of what we say in marriage is being bonded together as two people.
I just noticed that with this, being together is primary, all else is second. A lot of marriages are based on the concept of, is that a detrimental thing? We often talk about families being together, couples being together. Is that what we're talking about here? Or is that a new concept? Or whatever?
I don't think anything's new. But,
no, it's not.
I think maybe if we go on to what's down here under real love, we'll sort out a little bit the difference between being together and being individual and separate. And then maybe we can get to an answer there. Under real love, we've got the process of being willing to extend oneself for the purpose of nurturing one's own or another's spiritual growth. A permanently self-enlarging, other-enlarging relationship. I think that's an interesting thing to toss around, is that maybe love isn't a feeling at all. Maybe it's only a relationship.
A nurturing?
Well, a nurturing is a part of the activity of a love relationship. It's one of the things that maybe encourages the relationship to grow.
Isn't this what he was talking about, Pluto?
Yeah.
Well, he's trying to sort out the difference between being bonded in a love relationship and being separate individuals. And how, you know, are they contradictory?
But I think this is basically what it says. It's a permanently self-emargent, other-emargent relationship. I guess the opposite is keeping your male dominance and keeping barefoot pregnant in the kitchen. Because she'll never grow, except, temporarily.
Yes. Yeah. And behind she'll never grow is the assumption she then won't leave.
Right. And that's more addictive. That comes under addiction, not love.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, she doesn't need to grow. She's perfectly happy the way she is.
No, I wouldn't say that.
Oh. Okay.
He's
the perfectly happy one. Okay.
Well, maybe she doesn't know there's something else.
Which is to his benefit to keep her ignorant. Yeah, okay. Let's go on. Self-love and other love are often indistinguishable.
Now that's where you're talking about the two shall be as one.
Perhaps. Okay. The activities of taking care of me and taking care of or doing for, or giving to the other that I love, happens simultaneously. Maybe there's some balance between taking care of myself and taking care of my loved other, too. It's volitional, voluntary choice, not emotional. It's a choice to be involved, to enter into. Now this next dash is another statement. Encourages each in the journey of spiritual growth. That doesn't belong with volitional or non-emotional, but there was no more space at the bottom of the page. Encourages each in the journey of spiritual growth. It's a self and other encouraging experience, relationship. Individuated self-identity, self-love, and self-care are a prerequisite. I think that's an interesting idea, that maybe a love relationship can't happen if you have one of the two people not committed to their own self-identity, their own self-love, their own self-care before you enter in. Happiness happens when the happiness and well-being of the other is as important to you as your own. Again, another way of talking about the balance between self-care, other care, and keeping them balanced out. Seen when what is best for the other person is more important than your being with them. That was an interesting thought that came out of Peel's book, Love and Addiction. How do you know whether you're in love or addicted to somebody? And his question was, which would you rather be, with them or see them happy? If you had to choose between the happiness of your loved one or being with them, which would you choose? And I think he was saying if you choose to be with them, maybe you're addicted. You choose for their happiness, maybe you love them or are in love with them.
I think, though, if you're dealing with the word happiness, somehow it seems like what is being said is that you can control their happiness in some way. And I'm not so sure that we can control anyone's happiness or give them happiness better than they control. I don't know if I don't believe that really goes together. We can't give someone happiness. That must be their growth. But I can see the happiness growth coming out of the relationship. It would come from the other person, though. I am happy that we have this love relationship in some way. But if the person doesn't give it to them, it's something that's created by two parties.
Yeah. Yeah. An issue of control and giving feelings and emotions that we'll talk about next week. Another session. The relationship is seen as a want, not a need. It's another interesting thought. If you need to be with that other person, is that a dependency? Is that an addiction? If you can say, I don't need the other person for self-fulfillment or even enjoyment in life, but I want to be with that person as a part of my life, maybe that's love and not addiction. If you need that other person for happiness, maybe like a chemical, you are addicted. The relationship, oh, I read that one. Quote from Peck, good marriage can exist only between two strong and independent people. Maybe a marriage relationship of love won't work if you've got a strong one and a weak one, or two weak ones, well, or two dependent people. Or
I don't agree. This is where you said there's really nothing new under the sun, but I guess I've been reading books and I'm kind of a historical thought myself, and a relationship and a marriage up to the last 30 or 40 years, I didn't see it in my own parents. Wasn't always a matter of that. I mean, that's where I think the concept of marriage in America in particular has changed a lot, because the woman had absolutely nothing to say about it up to the last few hundred years or 100 years.
So that wasn't a good marriage.
No, but not in definition of our modern terminology and our more liberal and open-minded approach to life, where people are educated regardless of sex discrimination and all this kind of thing. That's why I say his assertion, a direct assertion like this, does imply something totally different than was factual and historical.
I think it assumes that we're now living in a society that's primary goal isn't necessarily to survive. You know, back then, you got married, love didn't have to have anything to do with it. You need to get married to work the farm, to have children, to keep the farm going, to eat and exist. I mean, marriage was just a part of the way you survived.
Love was incidental.
Oh, very.
Well,
and that's probably more, and that's probably a lot what's implied in a lot of this kind of stuff we're talking about here too, but it almost tends to fall under the, you know, addiction, the necessity of, absolute necessity of being together. In the Old West, and nothing like the old, like being out here to remind you of that, without, you know, without that bond, without that total commitment, and of course, that even created, ironically, created independence for women, because women had more independence in the West earlier than they had anywhere else in the world. So that's a whole thing.
I think it's an interesting thought that part of the progressiveness of our society has moved us beyond the basic struggle to survive, and now people are beginning to expect that you got to love someone before you marry them. Many times, maybe that was never entered in before in the past.
I don't think the role that was determined in society necessarily made a person strong or weak. You know, there were very, very, very many strong women as there are then as now, even though their role was probably different. I think he's talking about self-identity, who I am, and I can carry out that role.
Sure. Yep. Absolutely.
I mean, it's true that the people now are the same as they were in the past. They're strong women, strong men. It's always been pretty much the same in, you know, the character of individuals, but there's maybe another different outward.
Well, maybe we have different expectations about it.
For every one or for every 10 impressions you get of a change in life, there's 10 more out there that are similar to the old days and real love and commitment.
Yeah.
We also define those words differently today. The word strong is different than the way we see it today. Independent or interdependent was defined differently. So words change.
Sure.
Therefore, that changes the concepts in society.
Yep.
Come back for a minute to role. How many roles do you play in a day that are interdependent? You know, you as an individual, each of us as an individual, fight. One of the basic facts of self-discovery is to find out how many roles you play and how well you do in those roles, in psychology and everything.
And how do you stay true to who you are, moving in and out of some of those different roles? Sure. Let's go on. Based on a commitment to be loving, a willful decision to grow together separately. The real struggle, I think it's a real tension between growing together and yet staying individual with identity as a person. Another quote, if being loved is your goal, you will fail to achieve it. The only way to be assured of being loved is to be a person worthy of love, and you cannot be a person worthy of love when your primary goal in life is to passively be loved. Catch 22. Distinction between oneself and the other is always maintained and preserved. Genuine love sees the other as one with a totally separate identity, respects and encourages the separateness and the unique individuality of the other. It's our commitment after the wedding which makes possible the transition from falling in love to genuine love, just as it is our commitment after conception which transforms us from biological to psychological parents. I think that's a real interesting kind of idea that many people that I've seen in marriage therapy say, oh, we were so madly in love, and now that's all gone.
Now we're just mad.
Yeah.
Angry.
Or I don't love him anymore, and that's why I'm going to get a divorce. Peck says some interesting things in this chapter about falling in love, that whole romantic, hormonal, erotic experience goes away, you know. We talk about the honeymoon's over and it's time to get down to the work of being married. But I think a lot of people have that expectation. The honeymoon has to last forever in order for us to have a successful marriage. How many married people here are still living in the honeymoon? There's one. Come on down here, we want to talk to you.
I love that.
You got married Saturday, right?
I was going to say, sometimes it's in the honeymoon state, you know, where if you can be apart from your regular life for a while,
like
on a vacation or something, you get some of that back.
You can hear what you said?
Moves back into a more deeper kind of a relationship to that.
I know that they
doesn't allow.
Yeah.
You said there is no honeymoon in your regular life.
No.
Yeah. The separateness of the partners enriches the union. And then there's a couple poems here that Peck, I've got some copies that I can give you. These are both from Gibran, the prophet. And I think they wrestle with. These things have gotten used a lot. They get used a lot in weddings. The one he talks about with the children says, your children are not your children. They are the sons and daughters of life's longing for itself. They come through you, but not from you. And though they are with you, yet they belong not to you. You may give them your love, but not your thoughts, for they have their own thoughts. You may house their bodies, but not their souls, for their souls dwell in the house of tomorrow, which you cannot visit, not even in your dreams. You may strive to be like them, but seek not to make them like you. For life goes not backward, nor tarries with yesterday. You are the bows from which your children as living arrows are sent forth. The archer sees the mark upon the path of the infinite, and he bends you with his mark, that his arrows may go swift and far. Let your bending in the archer's hand be for gladness, for even as he loves the arrow that flies, so he also loves the bow that is stable. Interesting sort of sorting out of relationship between your children and you, or you as the child and your parents. And then the one that gets read at a lot of weddings is, but let there be spaces in your togetherness, and let the winds of the heavens dance between you. Love one another, but make not a bond of love. Let it rather be a moving sea between the shores of your souls. Fill each other's cup, but drink not from one cup. Give one another of your bread, but eat not from the same loaf. Sing and dance together and be joyous, but let each one of you be alone. Even as the strings of a lute are alone, though they quiver with the same music. Give your hearts, but not into each other's keeping. For only the hand of life can contain your hearts. and stand together, yet not too near together, for the pillars of the temple stand apart, and the oak tree and the cypress grow not in each other's shadow.
Who was that second?
They're both by Gibran. I got a bunch of copies if you'd like them later. Okay. Where does that leave us?
With an asterisk on constructive.
With an asterisk on constructive. Okay.
Yeah. I'd like to address just to the group. How do you get out of an addictive relationship without destroying the other person? Without, you know, if you realize you're in an addictive relationship, what are some of the things that are helpful, and what are some of the things that aren't?
You're assuming the addiction is positive.
No, not necessarily. The question was, how do you get out of an addictive relationship without destroying the other person?
Yeah.
I'm sure the answer is here. Who has some ideas?
I think the first step is awareness and willingness to pursue the truth in the relationship.
Being willing to face up honestly to what's really taking place in the relationship.
One of the things, I think along that line, I don't think this is an answer to her question totally, but we're talking about the growth, separate growth relationships, and I think most all of us who've been married for many years have witnessed spouse ourselves. We are dominant in one growth period. The other catches up and surpasses, and then you... But during that period of time, there's a very dangerous time because you have to adjust to each other. And I wonder if at that time you don't often go into an addictive love relationship until that passes over, and then we come back into the love relationship. I don't know if this would be so, but it seems like we would. In other words, it's kind of a rote love for a while, which I would say would be addictive. And then the realization where that other person is and accepting it and then liking it, and then you get back into a love relationship again. But I think this is a period where we all go through it. One of our most dangerous periods. And I just wonder, is it possible that we do go into addictive love for a while as sort of it's a crutch for you, I don't know. But it just works that way, it seems to me. It works that way. And it may be a partial thought towards what the young lady's question is about.
It seems to me, though, she's talking about a relationship with that flexibility to be able to accommodate.
Without flexibility?
Yeah, that's that flexibility period I'm talking about. Sometimes in that flexibility period, you drop into wondering what's really going on. And it seems to me you just sort of carry over to some other, your love relationship carries, but it might be more in the addictive, because there's a lot of, there's emotions involved in this. And there's a lot of...
yeah, there's emotions involved.
You're thinking of yourself a lot, you know, and these things happen. I think it goes on in every marriage.
I think the question is a lot more profound than it might seem, though, because if you look at what's going on in society in general, if you deal, for instance, with battered women, the situation of intervention, and, you know, several years ago, and the woman is separated, and she finally isn't being beaten up anymore, and she says, geez, you know, it's like he doesn't love me anymore because he's not me. But you just look at the other general, you know, the pervasiveness of the abusiveness, physical abusiveness, which, you know, maybe even if physical abusiveness it's there, and, you know, frustration is, why do people stay in those relationships?
Well, not just why do they stay, why do they oftentimes get back into the same type of relationship?
Okay. Yeah, so your question is big, and I don't think, you know, we can talk about it.
Well, maybe I should clarify where I was at when I asked this.
Okay.
I see a lot of young couples when they get married, you know, particularly if the girl hasn't been trained and she stays home, she can possibly end up getting into the coffee clutch type of thing, and a girl in the coffee clutch can end up being maybe more meaningful than that guy she married. And she gets into an addictive relationship with a girlfriend, or the guy who, you know, he's got to go out three nights a week to be with the guys. Those are addictive relationships.
Yeah.
And
those
there
are what,
from that comes breakup.
Often those are what we call a love shift when the romance is gone. The honeymoon's over, then they look and shift the object of that to somewhere or something else.
Richard, I'm wondering, well, that's interesting that you open up there, because I think that this seems to be couched, and maybe justifiably so, in the concept of real love being experienced in a marriage relationship. And that's somewhat the mythology of our society, because it seems to me that certainly we need to work on that, and the community needs to work on that. But there are many real love relationships outside of the marriage relationships that are growing, creative type of experiences.
Yeah.
And I think that needs to be addressed and spoken to. Is that possible to have that type of relationship or friendship with a female friend, a male friend, without it being seen as being rotten or wrong?
And with it being even edifying to the marriage, if there's one.
Yeah, matter of fact, it seemed to me it would be edifying, you know, that if people have, because that leads to that separateness where the people have that kind of a, well, what Gibran says so well, you know, that distance, that space between each other.
Yeah.
Because I think the union that you held a while back has been a myth that has not really found the fulfillment or fruition in what we hope for it to be, and particularly in a society with, you know, the struggles we have in maintaining the integrity of marriage. But if people have more real loving friendships outside of the marriage commitment, that we'd be whole people, richer people, to enrich our marriages.
That's an interesting thought, and I think it goes against the myth that the marriage ought to be the ultimate, and other love relationships outside that would detract from it.
I think we set ourselves up for that.
Oh, sure.
Because in the 50s, some of us who were alive and growing in the 50s remember, you know, Leave It to Beaver. You know, some of those types of...
Ozzie and Harriet.
Ozzie and Harriet, yeah.
Or in those beds.
Yeah.
But don't you think that in every relationship that you go from love to addiction, back and forth, back and forth, and you don't stay in any one category. If you both have a good relationship, you vacillate, you know, you're a pendulum. You're swinging back and forth from one to the other at various times, and depending on the circumstances at that given moment in time.
Are you confusing addiction and need?
No.
George, because it seems like in a healthy relationship there's a time when you need the other person maybe more than the reverse is true and it goes back and forth. It seems like addiction is more of a, almost somebody said mentally ill thing before. Yeah, or that way.
Well, I don't think it will always be to that point. I think that there are different degrees.
Yeah.
There are different degrees of addiction.
But we're talking, though, about needing somebody differently when we talk about needing somebody in a relationship as a reason to exist, and needing somebody in a love relationship when you're really painful, hurting, and vulnerable and you need someone to cry with or care for you. Isn't that need in two different ways? Yeah, a possessive, sterile, binding up kind of thing. And now the other's a caring, supporting, encouraging, growing, sharing. Yeah.
I saw a lot of those gray areas can be defined also as a sick need and a healthy need, or a sick dependency and a healthy dependency.
Yeah. How about the thought, though, of you're a pendulum? And you swing between love and dependency in one relationship or in a number?
One, in a marriage, you swing that way. And you will do the same thing in other relationships also.
I think that where in the real love thing in the paper, where it says self-love and other love are often indistinguishable, I think that's where your fine line comes in, maybe you're thinking of addiction is going that one way, where you need to love yourself, and you need to let yourself grow, but you sometimes that line is very unfindable compared to the same thing you may be doing for someone else.
But that may not be an addiction thing.
Right.
Yeah.
But I think, I guess I'm sort of looking at this as, I don't think we should look at it on a continuum necessarily, that on this, you know, on a good side you have love and you have some middle ground and you have some, you know, if you swing over here, you're addiction, which I think the pendulum would indicate. I think that it's, that you can be in one and you have to be out of it into another, but there's no, there are areas that sound similar, back to my equivocating again, but I think they are antithetical rather than on a continuum.
Can I ask a question? Mm-hmm. How does Christ, in his definition of love, get into this discussion? Seems there was a lot of, I remember 2 Corinthians, was it 13 or 11, talked about what the definition of love.
Love is patient.
Patient, kind, all these kind of things. That's really got a lot of our words. But, I guess I've always had in my mind, that's why it bothers me a little bit, the concept of love as being such an eye-centered. It seems like a lot of text implications here are me. And I know you're giving to the other person, but it's also implying that you're not making that many demands on that person to, I'm assuming this is marriage, but it can be other relationships, on that person to, you know, to be one. Mm-hmm. Let's go back to the marriage vows, to be one. That's also something a lot of weddings. What is love? And that's why when I'm talking about a conceptualization here that we're working through, all of us coming from different backgrounds, but maybe I'm a little too old, I don't know, for this, because a lot of it talks about singleness, and maybe it is a matter of growth. Maybe we haven't been growing like we should, but I think we've always been taught that mom and dad, they're one, they go together, they always stick together.
But it's a struggle, isn't it, between being separate and yet one, being identifiable individuals and yet together?
That's why I think we have difficulty defining it. It's because it's not so much a definable thing as it is an activity.
It's kind of an ongoing process.
One fellow over here said the willingness to pursue the thing, the being there, whatever the situation is.
Yeah. I think
it
comes up in
so
many
forms. Always was.
We want to talk about constructive versus destructive, or have we already?
We've confirmed the fact.
We've confirmed what?
It is mine. It's confirmed.
That, well,
that love is constructive and addiction is destructive.
Okay.
Maybe moment, it may be for a time have some gain for a person, but in the long range, I would say it's destructive.
The interesting thing Peck talks about, of course, is this stuff's got to get balanced out and so forth. And he talks about a healthy love relationship is one in which two people are their own best, their own and the other person's best critics.
Yes.
And that maybe that's part of the strength of a good love relationship, is that you know how to be open and honest and critical of yourself and the other, to work it out together towards both of your growth and fulfillment.
They're not known for both of you.
And that's a constructive task that involves being eyes for someone else for their benefit. Mutually.
It seems that, and I'm taking this now as from an addict, as we know addiction in other forms, physical addiction to, say, a drug or something like that, that the addict only realizes he's an addict when he admits it, when he looks at himself honestly and is able to admit it. Nobody else can help him. He must only help himself. As you, in your counseling, I'm sure you know that much better, but working with high school kids, I see that same thing. Kids that have finally admitted that they're addicts are able to get away from addiction because they know they get to that point and then they go right back to it. And peer pressure can cause that and everything else. when you look at that versus love, I have a hard time equating the two, putting them together, that how do you admit you're an addict to another person or to a relationship? How do you know that? How do you understand that it's not love, that it's addiction, if the two are in opposition? Do you understand my question there?
I think it's on there. It says, you know, there's no looking at yourself, no self-evaluation, no self-assessment involved here at all. Maybe you don't admit it. Maybe you don't know it.
That's what I'm saying. Then how do you get there?
Find yourself a good therapist.
Thanks a lot. Good answer.
My guess is that you, if you're lucky, somehow you are willing to accept the question, should I look at whether I'm in love or addicted? Maybe it would be helpful for me to evaluate and wrestle with that question. And then if you're willing to enter the process of am I or am I not, maybe that works you there, gets you towards that direction.
But you would only have to, you'd have to have someone that would be able to help you to see that. You wouldn't see it on your own unless there's some sort of demand.
Yeah, maybe. And that might be someone who loves you.
Right.
Thank you for coming.